We know that the North Koreans desperately try to get foreign currency and liquid funds that they can move back to Pyongyang.
Loose controls help fund North Korea. It's Tuesday, October 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, President Trump makes his final campaign push. U.S. vice presidential perspectives on China. Afghan crops wither amid the virus. Faith for the homeless. Girls making a difference. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A new report points to allegations of violations of North Korean sanctions in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and observers say it is a sign of a systematic problem, and experts warn that unless the country improves its banking systems, it risks broader economic consequences. VOA's Salem Salomon has the story.
Business and banking dealings by North Koreans in the Democratic Republic of the Congo appear to violate numerous international sanctions, according to watchdog groups who say Pyongyang is taking advantage of the DRC's lax bank system. A report in August by Sentry, a Washington, D.C.-based organization that tracks money which finances conflicts in Africa, found that in 2018, two North Korean businessmen traveled to the DRC on non-commercial visas, set up a construction firm, opened a bank account, and were awarded contracts for numerous projects, including building government-funded statues. Investigators say the report shows that North Korea is seeking out parts of the world where it can operate secretly and obtain foreign currency otherwise unavailable to the secretive and internationally isolated government.
All these different steps are important because that entire process is littered with a number of violations of UN, EU, and U.S. sanctions. And those sanctions specifically focus on preventing just the kind of activity we wrote about, which is North Koreans setting up businesses, which would give them an opportunity to generate revenue, and then allowing them to set up bank accounts that would enable them to transact in foreign currencies, which are critical to the government in Pyongyang.
That was John Deloso, senior investigator for Sentry. Jean-Louis Kayembe Wakayembe, who is the director general at the DRC Central Bank and head of the Monetary Policy Committee, declined to comment when contacted by VOA. North Korean officials have not commented on the Sentry allegations or business dealings in the DRC. The Sentry report says that upon arrival in the DRC, the North Korean men established relationships with elected officials from the People's Party for Reconstruction and Democracy, the former ruling party headed by ex-president Joseph Kabila. Among the projects undertaken by the North Koreans was building a statue of Kabila's father, ex-president Laurent Kabila, in the southern city of Kamina. Another statue they built in the city depicts a leader from the Luba ethnic group. Deloso said the opacity of the contracts makes it impossible to know exactly how much the men were paid, but he said similar statues can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. He also said it is unproven whether DRC officials knew they were breaking the law by doing business with North Koreans, but the general leniency in the country reveals major problems.
This wasn't just a single foul-up, if you want to call it that. There was a series of foul-ups that enabled this activity to take place. So even if the money had been small, we know that the North Koreans desperately try to get foreign currency and liquid funds that they can move back to Pyongyang. But the bigger question is, what else might be going on here in the country, and what is the level of enforcement of sanctions overall in the DRC?
In a recent event held by a Washington, D.C. think tank, the Atlantic Council, Congolese banking system expert Florbert Anzulini, the co-founder and coordinator of the Filimbi for Citizens movement, said the country is particularly vulnerable to this type of activity.
I'm clearly not surprised by the content of the report. It's clearly a systemic problem. It's not only this one. It's the consequence of the systemic problem that the country is facing, which includes bad governance and, of course, corruption.
He added that the DRC is one of the only countries in the world without a national identification system. Therefore, its banks are accustomed to taking alternative forms of ID, making it easy for foreigners to open accounts without scrutiny.
If cannot identify persons, how could you be able to identify the business that are run by person? So the DRC is also one of the, let's say, the few countries where a non-resident can open and hold an account without a rigorous control. So the central bank is the one responsible.
Deloso says since a large percentage of business in the DRC is conducted in foreign currency, the country relies on relationships with international banks to keep its economy moving.
If the DRC were deprived of U.S. dollars, we're not just talking about large mining companies that all of a sudden are facing a crisis. We're talking about, you know, everyday people who are directly affected or indirectly affected. And that would be catastrophic, particularly in a country that's facing a lot of economic hardship right now connected to the COVID-19 pandemic and just general economic mismanagement.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China holds military invasion drill amid tensions with Taiwan. Deadly fighting rages for control of Afghan city. At least 18 killed in bus and train collision in Thailand. New Japanese Prime Minister plans Asia trip to prove solidarity with the United States. Aboriginal groups address inquiry into destruction of sacred rock shelters. We invite you to visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website for expanded coverage on all these stories and much more. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he's ready to return to the campaign trail after his recent COVID-19 diagnosis. Former Vice President Joe Biden is heading to Ohio this week to press his case for a White House win come November 3rd. Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate begins confirmation hearings on Amy Coney Barrett, Trump's nominee for the vacancy on the Supreme Court. Michelle Quinn fills us in.
First of all, I'm feeling great. I don't know about you. How's everyone feeling?
With just 3 weeks left before Election Day, President Donald Trump said he's ready to get back on the campaign trail after recovering from COVID-19. His doctor released a statement Sunday saying the Republican president is no longer considered a transmission risk. But a presidential candidate debate scheduled for this week isn't happening. Trump pulled out of a planned virtual debate with former Vice President Joe Biden, a Democrat.
That's how debates have been handled in America for the last 200 years. You've stood there and you've debated somebody. And my father doesn't want to do it over a glorified conference call. He wants to stand on a stage, look somebody in the eyes, and Biden's not willing to do that.
The Biden campaign says its candidate looks forward to debating Trump in person on October 22nd. As long as the president is free of the infection and follows health protocols. Although Biden leads Trump by as many as 12 percentage points in a recent national poll of likely voters, both candidates are heading to so-called battleground states, key states that could decide the election. This week, Trump is scheduled to go to Florida for a rally and then Pennsylvania. Biden will be in Ohio. People have started voting in many states. Turnout appears high in Wisconsin, a battleground state, where in Dane County, a Democratic stronghold, the number of submitted ballots is already more than 36% of the county's total 2016 election vote, the New York Times reported. The Biden campaign is telling people to vote early and in person in states that allow them to do so.
We're telling people to take advantage of early vote in person. And remember, look, I'm on the ballot. New Orleans and Louisiana started early voting yesterday, and I'm encouraging people to take advantage of the voting process. Early vote in person is a great way to do it. It reduces lines on Election Day.
While the campaigns drive home their messages, the Senate begins confirmation hearings this week on Amy Coney Barrett to become the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. The hearing will provide another stage for discussions of the country's future. If confirmed, Barrett will replace Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died in September. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, nearly 20 people are dead, more than a dozen reported missing in central Vietnam after storms caused heavy flooding that left homes submerged. The severe weather also caused fishing boats to capsize in rough seas. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The vice presidential debate between Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris highlighted differences between their approaches on foreign policy and America's role in the world. The two candidates debated whether President Donald Trump or Democratic nominee Joe Biden would do a better job addressing challenges by U.S. rival China and its longtime adversary Iran. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara reports.
The coronavirus has dominated American politics in recent months, but in this week's vice presidential debate, Vice President Mike Pence and his Democratic opponent Senator Kamala Harris argued their view of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East and China, issues that have had less focus in the campaign so far. Pence highlighted the recent Abraham Accords that normalize Israel's relations with United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. He said the administration subdued Iran by assassinating its chief military strategist Qasem Soleimani and defeated ISIS.
President Trump unleashed the American military, and our armed forces destroyed the ISIS caliphate and took down their leader al-Baghdadi without one American casualty.
Kamala Harris said America is less safe because of Trump's unilateral approach to foreign policy. Citing the administration's 2018 withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal, achieved in 2015 with ally support.
What we have seen with Donald Trump is that he has betrayed our friends and embraced dictators around the world.
The Iran nuclear deal is a key difference between Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden, with Biden promising to return to it immediately if elected.
That would put Israel and some of the other U.S. allies in the region, the Persian Gulf region, plus countries like Saudi Arabia, they would then be on the defensive, and that would be a challenge. But I'm not at this point convinced that that will create a rupture in U.S. Israel relations, or for that matter, U.S.-Saudi relations.
Pence slammed Biden for being a cheerleader for communist China. He said the administration wants to improve relations with Beijing, but that Trump will also hold China accountable for the pandemic.
China and the World Health Organization do not play straight with the American people.
Harris accused Trump of hurting American jobs and economy because of his trade war with China. She cited recent global opinion polls by Pew Research that indicated U.S. allies now respect China's Xi Jinping more than they do Donald Trump.
This is where we are today because of a failure of leadership by this administration.
The Pence-Harris debate outlined a difference in foreign policy between Trump's America First doctrine and Biden's multilateral approach. If elected, Biden has promised he would return the U.S. to leadership roles in international organizations like the World Trade Organization and Trans-Pacific Partnership to contain adversaries, including China.
That, I think, would produce less uncertainty in the U.S.-China relationship. I think the nature of the relationship, fundamentally contentious and adversarial, would be the same in a second Trump term or in a Biden term.
While foreign policy is usually not at the forefront of voters' minds, one important issue this year is standing up for Israel, which matters to a key group of Trump supporters, evangelical Christians who made up about a third of Trump's backers in 2016. Both Trump and Biden have pledged continued support for Israel. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News at the White House.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. North Korea held a new version of its mass games, marking the 75th anniversary of the ruling Workers' Party coming to power. Leader Kim Jong-un viewed the games at Pyongyang's massive May Day Stadium. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. Like most of the world, Afghanistan has seen its share of business losses due to the pandemic, with its agriculture sector being hit particularly hard. VOA's Asif Husani has more from Ghazni, Afghanistan, in this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Agriculture is the Afghanistan's biggest industry. It provides jobs for thousands of farmers and their families in the country, but COVID has changed all that.
This year, due to border problems, fertilizer has been available to us later and it's even more expensive. The second problem is because of transit issues, our exports have decreased.
Last year, the situation was better and our income was higher. But this year, due to the spread of the coronavirus, our wages are lower and we have problems.
Farmers here in Afghanistan's eastern province of Ghazni say the summer border closings hurt their exports.
Every year, about 5 to 6 cucumber trailers were exported daily from Ghazni province. But this year, due to the spread of the coronavirus, our exports have decreased and the price of cucumbers has also decreased.
Produce sellers in the local markets are also witnessing the pandemic's effects.
Coronavirus restrictions have had a negative effect on us. Produce has become cheaper and is not being exported.
Ghazni's Department of Agriculture says under the Farmers Support Program, measures are being taken to preserve unsold produce in refrigerated storage units so that local farmers and produce sellers are not left with losses.
Several raisin houses, potato, onion and apple cold storages, as well as a number of dryers have been allocated to Ghazni province from government.
But there is some hope. Local farmers here say that as COVID restrictions have begun to ease, demand and prices are slowly bouncing back. For Asif Husseini in Ghazni, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Some social media watchers say Facebook's deletion of accounts targeting the Philippines from bases in China shows that the U.S. internet giant wants a better reputation in Southeast Asia after letting things slide in the past. Last month, Facebook said it had removed 155 of its own accounts and 6 Instagram accounts for violating an internal policy against foreign or government interference. James Gomez, regional director at the Bangkok-based think tank Asia Center, says Facebook's move will endear it to Filipinos.
It's more from a kind of a PR point of view. I do this at this particular time. Somehow it's seen as positive, and I can say, look, I have done this.
Facebook had been allowing relatively unfettered access by politicians, hate speech spreaders, and purveyors of fake news in the region. Ramon Casapol is the executive director of the Metro Manila-based advocacy group Institute for Political and Electoral Reform.
We would welcome that there is a self-governance on the part of Facebook. There was a lot of that in the past, up to now.
Eduardo Ararel, a Filipino and associate professor at the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School, says Filipinos are starting to eye the 2022 presidential election, motivating Facebook to clean up.
They have to be active in showing that Facebook is no longer used or can no longer be used as a platform for inauthentic behavior.
Facebook has also removed accounts in Singapore and Myanmar as both countries approach political milestones. We thank Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, for 14 years, a Christian pastor has worked with the homeless of Los Angeles, a growing population living on the streets. The problem has only worsened by the COVID pandemic. Mike O'Sullivan paid a visit to the Roe Church, a church without walls in the Skid Row section of the city.
It is Friday night in the heart of Skid Row, home to some of 66,000 homeless people of Los Angeles County. For 14 years, Pastor Stephen Q. Jean-Marie has preached his message here.
We come out and we feed people, right? We feed them first the spiritual word of God, we call it, and then we give them physical food.
Whether or not they join in the service. Officials say soaring rents and stagnant wages have worsened homelessness, and Los Angeles needs an extra half million affordable housing units. Local officials are bracing for worse because of the surge in unemployment caused by the pandemic. Officials housed 6,000 people after COVID-19 broke out, but thousands remain on the streets. Society is forgotten.
There's a lot of good people down here, but it's like the has-beens, the ex-gang members, the ex-pimps or prostitutes, ex-parolees, ex-probation, or their family just forgot about them. So they end up coming down here.
Many are here because of hardship, says a musician who became homeless after facing crushing medical bills, a life-changing experience.
This is the only place where I can say the people are authentic, they are real, they are in your face, right? But they're also beautifully loving and giving. I hadn't found as many giving people as when I came to, obviously, the poorest part of Los Angeles.
African Americans are four times more likely than other populations to experience homelessness, say local officials and those who work on the streets.
It's a systemic issue that goes way back. And if you're trying to deal with it beginning now, you're never going to deal with it.
Creep through the hood with my drop top. Pastor Q once celebrated urban street life as part of the rap group College Boys. Today, he reaches out through his preaching. Church members say it's helping.
I believe that it's small movements like this that will shift the paradigm. We can't focus on the hate. We can't focus on what's going on in Washington, D.C. We need to focus right here at home, individually, with each person you meet and see.
Offering some hope amid the despair. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
A new exhibit at the recently reopened National Museum of American History shows the challenges young women face growing up in the United States. Girlhood, It's Complicated, showcases the lives of American girls who advocated for social change and shaped the country's history. Karina Bafrijan has the story.
The new exhibit opening at the National Museum of American History, called Girlhood, It's Complicated, highlights the sometimes difficult journey of women growing up in the United States.
We also want people to understand that girlhood's complicated, right? That girls take big risks to use their voices, to walk on the front lines of change, and to be political advocates.
The exhibition is divided into five sections: health, education, work, politics, and fashion. Each of them walks the visitors through the history of girls growing up and maturing during different times in American history, from the American Revolution to our days.
Girls are taught so much about where they fit in, what they should wear, how they should look, who is a girl, who is not, who is our ideal girl. And girls automatically become more conscious of themselves, and they try to express themselves through this barrage and tornado of advice coming at them, and that makes you political.
Girls with very different lives have become the center and focus of the exhibit, including Helen Keller, a well-known political activist and author who lived in the first half of the 20th century. She was rendered deaf and blind by a childhood illness, but still pursued a higher education and spent her life fighting racism and gender discrimination. 13-year-old Naomi Wadler has a different story. The American student and activist gained the public's attention in 2018 when she made a passionate speech in Washington, D.C. against gun violence in America. The curators also spoke with many young girls across the nation to create the exhibit. The October 11 opening coincides with the United Nations International Day of the Girl Child, which aims to highlight the many challenges girls around the world face every day. The exhibit will stay open until 2022, giving girls and women more time to experience the exhibit firsthand. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
We're glad you've been able to spend some time with us today on VOA Asia. You can continue by following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd also like to thank those who helped bring the program to you: our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.